Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Laura, I sort of waded into troublesome territory in our last half hour when you have, you know, the guy opining on men v. women type issues. But we were talking about a very interesting Laura Ewen column in the Star Tribune. She's a great columnist.
Yes, she is. Yes.
Takes on just very interesting kind of family, relationship, society. Like, I love the topic she picks. I love it. So she was noticing a schlumpy mannequin that was sort of the butt of a joke in a trio of mannequins. So there was like a dad bod type mannequin that was like with some sort of reference about too many beers and that flanked by two like, you know, thin fit
models.
Model type mannequin.
Where are these? Where were
this
these?
This is outside a store at Mall of America.
Okay.
And she was saying... She was sort of trying to stand up for men and say that where are the men in the body positivity discussion?
Sure.
And the texters are very interesting, right? Because Dan brought up the point that, well, I said that I think, generally speaking, men can laugh at their bodies more than women can. Men generally have a better sense of humor about it.
Okay.
And Dan said it's because, you know, women have had generations of having it knocked into their head that their appearance is their value.
True.
Which I think he's right.
Yes, I do too.
But I also do think men have a better sense of humor about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right. So it's an interesting thing. Like, you know, there's this bigger picture of how men are portrayed in media. And I'm not asking for people like to pour one out for the poor man. Like, oh... How does one survive as a man in our society?
Yeah.
Like, we're doing fine.
Right.
But if you look in pop culture, men are, especially like in a family unit, in a sitcom or a movie, are often portrayed as sort of a doofus.
A little bit of a doofus, yes. And that extends to a lot of TV commercials.
Ugh, all the time.
All the time. We
I
laugh about
hate
it in our
it.
House. That it's just like this...
And your
stupid
husband
guy.
Is not a stupid guy.
No.
Like the opposite of an oaf.
Exactly. There are so many oafs in TV commercials, it's pathetic.
Now, I know plenty of oafy guys.
Yeah.
Like, it bothers me, but it doesn't. I'm not like, we need a body positivity movement for men. I don't know about that. Maybe we do.
Now, okay, just having you say that, the commercial popped into my head of the man... who is clearly very positive feeling about his own body, prancing around in a red Speedo.
Yes, yes.
What's that all about? I don't even know what that's for. Is it some psoriasis drug or something? And now he's
I think it is.
Proud
it's,
that he
I
can
think
just
right.
show his body and his skin all over the land.
It gets your attention,
it's
doesn't
on
it?
All the time, or
he's,
at least it was a few weeks ago.
He's got a dad bod.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with a dad bod. Is that what we're talking about? Like, you know,
well,
are
the,
we...
that's part of the mannequin is... It's more of a beer gut mannequin, I would say, than
it's
a dad
It's more realistic bod. To the average man.
Do we want realistic models?
Yes.
Why?
Because I think it makes people feel like you don't need to be a skinny mini to wear these really cute clothes because...
Well, I do. I agree with that. I wish clothes would fit people of different sizes
yes.
better.
And yes, I do too. But when you see those clothes on a mannequin that is more... closely aligned with your own body, you can at least think, yeah, maybe I could pull that off. And it might spur you to try it on and you'd love it. And, you know, why not?
I think overall, like this body positivity thing is overall, I think it's good. I do think that it makes people, and like it's not my place to tell somebody they should lose some weight, but I think we know that the single biggest thing you can do to improve your health is to lose weight.
Or to not be overweight. Yes.
Right.
Right.
And my doctor, when I finally went and had a physical last week, and she said that she sometimes is nervous to tell people that they should lose weight because she's seen plenty of people who are statistically overweight mm-hmm. who are healthy.
Right.
So she tries to encourage people to be healthy. But I do think sometimes, like, we should be positive about bodies, all yep. shapes, beautiful, beautiful humans,
yes.
right? And love your skin.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, also, you want to live. You want to live a healthy life.
It's a health thing.
You know, you want to try to take care of yourself there. It's difficult to balance both of those messages without seeming like a jerk.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm not trying to body shame anybody,
exactly.
but you want people to be healthy.
You want them to be healthy. The message needs to be geared toward that, I think, instead of looks. Like,
yes.
everybody wants to look
yes.
good. But
that's
just because you're not a size 2 doesn't mean you don't look good. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. You know, this is reminding me, last weekend I had a delightful day. I belong to a group of women singers and musicians where we get together about once a month or so at each other's homes.
Hmm.
And it's like a book club, but it's for music.
For music. Oh.
And we pick one song that everybody learns.
Right.
And we have singers, we have guitar players, we have a keyboard player. This time we had a ukulele in there and a flute. It's wonderful. We're all just amateurs who love music and love to sing and make music together. Don't really know each other very well. This is kind of a newer thing.
Huh.
But one of the women in my group is this beautiful, larger, former burlesque dancer in San Francisco.
Mm.
Who is just the most gorgeous woman I have ever seen in my life. And she is bigger.
Bigger, sure.
But very fashionable, takes
yeah.
care of herself, wears
oh, yeah.
beautiful makeup and hair and cute clothes, and has the most positive, confident attitude and way about her that you don't even see that she's a size
right.
whatever.
Whatever
she's
it
just
is, yeah.
her she radiates just this joy and positivity. And
that's cool.
I think
yeah.
that's kind of how we all want to be.
I like the way you said that we should discuss this more in terms of health instead of how you look. But also, like, obviously, I lost a lot of weight. Like, mm-hmm. I like that I look better.
Yes, of course.
So it's just very tricky. It's tricky to have these conversations because there's so much kind of baggage wrapped up in it, right?
I think it's okay.
You just want
to
be respectful.
Yeah. You have to be respectful. I think it's okay to do both, though, where you want to look better, which in many cases means dropping some weight, and you want to be healthier. You can
yeah.
have both.
Yeah. And it's what you want. But
mm-hmm.
sometimes, you know, a doctor wants to give a nudge because they care about you.
And that's their
all.
Job.
Yeah.
Yes.
I got quoted in an article that came out just within the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
Racket MN. And let me tell you how they describe me. Maple Grove-based radio DJ and food writer.
DJ? What are you going to spin today, Jason?
I like that. That's the funniest way I've ever been referenced.
Oh, gosh.
He was messing around.
That's funny.
Have you ever heard of this food combination? Cinnamon roll dipped in chili.
No.
Cinnamon roll chili.
Who's eating that?
Well, apparently Minnesota's governor
okay.
retweeted this tweet that came out from a PR guy for Senator Tina Smith. His name is Kyle Sorby.
Mm-hmm.
So Kyle tweeted this picture of a bowl of chili with a iced cinnamon roll in it.
Hmm.
And he said, apparently the East Coast is not receptive to cinnamon rolls with your chili. Like, I'm sorry, this looks amazing, and only Midwesterners understand.
I've never had that combination. It doesn't sound all that bad, though, when I think about it.
Well, we have cornbread
right.
with chili.
And that's sweet.
And that's sweet.
Yep.
And the comparison I used when Jay, the writer, asked me was a sloppy Joe. Like, the bun is usually a kind of a squishy hamburger, sweeter bread.
Yep.
And you have that tastes fine with the ground beef, so it's not that different. Chili and Sloppy Joe are pretty; they're cousins
yes.
for sure. They might be brothers.
Yeah.
But I had never. I've heard of it because I've read about this. There have been a couple articles about this combo:
chili and cinnamon rolls.
Chili and cinnamon
wow.
rolls. What's amazing to me, and if you go to this story on Racket's website. Like, unless this is made up, the governor did a rather extensive interview about this today. I'm like, I can't get the governor on my show. The last time we've had Governor Walz on this show, when was the last time, Dan? Was it the state fair?
I do believe it was.
Was I too tough on the governor? Like, that's it? He's only on with Vanita, and he only does answers about cinnamon rolls and racket?
Maybe you need to ply him with some cinnamon rolls and chili.
I mean, I don't want to make it all about me, but what the hell, Governor Walz? Like, come on the show. You're doing an interview with a website that I have to pay like $5 a month to be a member of. Like, come on. Not to make it all about me, but once again, I make it all about me. It's fine. I would 10 out of 10 try cinnamon roll with chili.
I would too.
But you just think, so apparently the history of this is that it was a school lunch scenario.
Okay.
But you just think about in the daily life of Laura Oakes or Dan Cook or Jason DeRusha, when would these two foods come together?
Never.
When would you even have an opportunity to have them together?
Maybe not even at a brunch, because you would never see chili at a brunch,
nope.
Really.
It's weird,
yeah,
right?
It is weird. But it does sound like it could work. I'd try it.
I would try it, too.
Let's do it.
Maple Grove-based radio DJ and food writer, along with St. Paul-based girls' club music group attendee, Laura. Dan, you're picking up the phone. Is that the governor? Is the governor ready to come on the show? Honest to God, he did an interview about cinnamon rolls and chili?
No, I'm just OCD and the cord was tangled. So.
Oh, okay.
You're so honest, Dan. That's so wonderful. Love it.
Unbelievable. 520, D Rush Hour News headlines coming up next. I hope this interview is made up, because I am going to find out if the governor of the state, with all the stuff that's going on, does an interview about cinnamon rolls and chili. I'm going to lose it. I'm absolutely going to lose my mind. It is the last D Rush Hour News headlines for March, so I'm going to be off the next couple days. It is the 29th. We start with Xcel Energy. The company has been getting slammed for not telling anyone about that tritium leak at the nuclear plant in Monticello until a couple of weeks ago, right? And we're like, what in the heck? There's a leak in November, and there's stuff in the water, and we don't find out until March. I actually reached out to the mayor of Monticello, invited him to come on our show, and he sent back a statement saying he's focused on the city and the residents. Well, maybe this is why he didn't want to come and answer some questions.
But emails obtained by Fox 9 tell a different story. On November 28th, someone from Xcel Energy notifies Monticello City Administrator Rachel Leonard that they've detected tritium levels above a reportable threshold in a monitoring well at the plant. It isn't until 3 months later, when Xcel starts requesting engineering and building permits, that Leonard starts asking questions.
So that's Courtney Godfrey at Fox 9 with this great investigation, looking at all of the emails between Xcel and the city of Monticello. So that first email came November 28th. That was 6 days after, you know, the sort of sensors they have in the water detected that radiated water. The community relations manager for Xcel sent like a three-sentence email to the Monticello city administrator. Also, FYI, CC'd on the email was a Wright County commissioner, Derek Vetch, whose district includes the city of Monticello, but the email from Xcel misspelled his first name. So it went the wrong place, wrong email address. So that was it until February 23rd. When the city started asking questions, because Xcel was requesting building permits to do some work at the plant. And the city's like, hey, what's the deal with the leak? February 24th, apparently Xcel gave some more information. So on February 24th, though, Xcel gave the city information. The first news release from the city 3 weeks later indicated that the city didn't really know anything about it until it was publicly announced, which, at least according to this Fox 9 story, appears to not be true. Falcon Heights is firing the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department. Well, they're not, I guess they're not renewing the contract of that Sheriff's Department. Right now, it's deputies patrolling Falcon Heights. They don't have a police department in that city. Falcon Heights told the sheriff, Bob Fletcher, that they're going to let that contract expire at the end of the year. The sheriff suggested in 2020 that the city find alternative long-term law enforcement partners. It seems like these two weren't exactly a perfect match here. Falcon Heights could, you know, hire somebody else. They could form its own police department. There could be a combo. $1.3 million is what they're paying in Falcon Heights. It was double what they paid St. Anthony for the same services in the past. But you remember what happened there. St. Anthony police officer Geronimo Yanez shot and killed Philando Castile during a 2016 traffic stop in Falcon Heights. So St. Anthony got fired. Ramsey County took over, and now Ramsey County Sheriff said, you know, it's not great to have our sheriff's deputies going all the way to Falcon Heights. They don't share a border with other county cities where deputies patrol. So there it is. Spring break happening right now. Many Minnesotans staying in a hotel, and most of us are not getting housekeeping. Is that what we want, or is it just a cost-cutting measure?
Housekeeping?
No, thank you. Sleeping.
Housekeeping?
Could you come back in an hour?
Housekeeping, you want towels?
More towels. Need sleepy.
Yeah, this is what I sounded like when I was in Chicago over the weekend. New York Times reporting that travel has largely rebounded. Hotel occupancy levels projected to reach 64% this year. Before the pandemic, it was 66. So we're getting there. But daily housekeeping, daily room cleaning seems to be a thing of the past. Guesting at mid-level hotels, the Hiltons, Marriott, Sheratons, Walt Disney World Resorts, other major brands are saying, you know, if you need housekeeping, you got to request it or clean your own room, make your own bed. Marriott trumpeted the new normal during an investor call. Marriott created a tier system for housekeeping. So if you stay at the Ritz or the St. Regis, you're paying $550 or more a night, you will get house cleaning. The next level is the Sheraton Le Meridien. You'd get a free daily tidy. Which, by the way, who among us doesn't want a free daily tidy? Your courtyard, your Four Points, your loft, your Moxie, you're getting every other day cleaning. Kind of interesting, right? I don't know. Like, I sort of love the luxury of leaving your hotel room at 10 in the morning and you come back at night and your bed is made. It's really nice. If they take away all the stuff, why would I stay at a mid-tier hotel? I may as well stay at the Motel 6. I deserve. Cook is just looking at me like such a snob. Don't you want? You probably don't want anyone touching your stuff.
Bingo.
Yeah, there certainly is a factor of that out there. 5:31, that's the D-Rush Hour News headlines. Twins have their opening day tomorrow in Kansas City. I want to get you ready. What do you need to know about this team? What are the storylines to watch? We're going to make you an educated fan, at least educated enough to fake it, with Dan Hayes in just a minute here on Drive Time.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
I feel like we're going to have to ask Dan Hayes what he wants his walk-up music to be for his Friday appearances. It'll be happening during Twin season here on Drive Time. But we start on a Wednesday. Dan, how's it going?
Great. And I'll tell you what, I mean, Killers, not a bad start right there. So that works okay.
Not bad.
But I'm glad we're doing this on Wednesday because I know we're both off Friday and I will be en route to Houston. Go Aztecs for the Final Four. I had to get that in there somehow real quick.
That's going to be better. Where am I going to be on Friday? I'm going to be in western Wisconsin in a cabin with my two kids.
Well, hey, that actually sounds okay.
That'll be good. My wife is going to Fort Lauderdale for the weekend. Oh. Yeah, my trip to western Wisconsin just sounded a little worse, didn't it?
It did. And my, you know, I think I found one reason to go to Houston, and the Final Four is it. So.
that's a pretty good reason for sure. Dan Hayes is with us. We wanted to get our fans ready for Twins baseball because a lot has happened in the off season, and I think it's defensible if as a Twins fan, you checked out when things went south at the end of last season. So if you've sort of been unplugged, what's the number one thing that you think a Twins fan should know about the team that's going to show up starting tomorrow?
Carlos Correa came back. I think that's the big one.
That's pretty big, yeah. If you miss that, you're not even a casual fan.
Yeah, exactly. No, I really like the starting pitching. The fact that And one part, and I do actually think the real Twins fans know this anyways, they obviously had to trade Luis Arraez to get Pablo Lopez, and that's a tough trade. And I think that did probably rub some fans the wrong way because, look, let's be frank about this, Luis Arraez is one of the most exciting at-bats in baseball, and it's going to be hard to not see him in the lineup with that energy. But the Twins have never been able to really develop their own pitching. They're working on it, and I think that they were – kind of alert to it last year that Chris Archer and Dylan Bundy just weren't going to get it done. You know, Sonny Gray wasn't in the best shape. I wrote a story earlier the month that he actually started throwing 4 days before the lockout began or ended last year. And so he was behind the eight ball all season. And when you had Dylan Bundy, who was really only effective through five, and Chris Archer, who couldn't even get through four, as mainstays in your rotation, they were really hamstrung most of the summer. And so they went out and they got Pablo Lopez to pair with Kenta Maeda, who's coming back. Sonny Gray is in fantastic shape. Joe Ryan had a really good rookie year and added some work on his slider to make him a more well-rounded pitcher, I think. And he's throwing Tyler Mahle. And Tyler Mahle, you know, yesterday allowed one hit over four, was hitting 94 six with his fastball. That's something we didn't see when they acquired him in that trade last year because of the shoulder issues. I really think the starting pitching may surprise some people, and obviously it needs to be put on the field, but on paper it looks pretty good. Maybe one of the best rotations the Twins have had in, I don't know, more than a decade. It's been a while. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
How do we feel about Jorge Lopez, and how do we feel about his stuff, what you've been seeing during spring training?
I mean, you know, he came out early on and pitched in the World Baseball Classic and dominated Puerto Rico. I think when he left the game, he gave up one run over 4 2/3 innings, struck out six against a good team. And I think Puerto Rico scored five after he left the game against Venezuela's bullpen. So it gives you a good idea of just where he is. And, you know, one of our experts at The Athletic, Eno Saris, he rates pitcher stuff accordingly. And there are somewhere around, I believe, 200 qualified pitchers that he ranks. And the Twins five, starting five, were rated between 42 and 71 in the ability of their stuff, essentially, which essentially means the Twins have a rotation full of number two and number three pitchers because, you know, obviously every team has 30 or there's 30 teams. Every team, you know, by the time you're at 61, that's a number three pitcher. The Twins, I think the lowest rated was Sonny Gray, maybe. No, it was Joe Ryan. Rated at number 42. And Kenta Maeda was the worst at 71. I think Pablo Lopez was like 57. So stuff wise, they have a bunch of number two and three pitchers. And look, I think fans are going to like Pablo Lopez a lot. He's very good with the media. Last week, he made a really good comment. He got to spend time on the Venezuelan roster with Luis Arraez at the World Baseball Classic. And he came out and said, I get why Twins fans were really sad about this. The Twins traded a really good guy for me. And he's like, But the fact of the matter is, I know they traded a really good guy for me, and that motivates me even more because it gives me confidence in what the Twins believe in me. And I think, you know, this says a lot about him. He's a really interesting guy. He will be their only second Venezuelan starter on opening day in club history as of tomorrow. And the other one was pretty good, that Johan Santana guy.
He was all right.
I don't think we're going to see that level. I mean, it's possible. You know, Pablo Lopez has a 350 ERA over since the start of the 2020 season, but I don't think he's a Cy Young dominant that good. But you know, he's a pretty good pitcher, and I think the Twins. It should be fun to watch him the next couple of years.
Dan Hayes is with us. I think I said, Pablo Lopez. I think I said the wrong Lopez name earlier, but, you know, that's why we're all getting up to speed here, right?
We're all, it's still spring training for everybody, and also that's going to be something my boss already pointed that out. We got to keep our Jorge Lopez and Pablo Lopez.
Two pitchers.
Straight.
Right.
And then one's number 48 and one's number 49, as if,
that's
as
ridiculous.
If that's not confusing.
That's absolutely ridiculous, yes. Positivity for the pitching staff, when you look at rules changes, I think that'll be the biggest thing that fans immediately notice. The pitch clock has gotten a lot of attention. What's your assessment of how that's been going?
I mean, look, everybody's going to be alarmed by it tomorrow, the casual fan that tunes in for the first time. But my dad is, been a baseball fan his entire life, and last week, he was watching a Giants-A's game, and he texted me an hour in. He's like, it's the fifth inning, and it's only been an hour. He's like, this is incredible. And, you know, I don't think it's going to go very bad. Who wants to watch 3.5-hour games?
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, there will be some people who definitely have issues with it. But at the same time, you know, we were just talking to Rocco Baldelli about it, and how much less time it requires people to be standing around on the field. And it was something like if the games, and I think last week when they did the check, MLB issued a statement saying that the average spring training game was going like 2 hours and 36 minutes. If we lost 25 to 30 minutes off of the average game time, I just don't think many people are going to complain about that. We always talk about how it's hard for the kids to stay up, you know, late for games and stuff like that, because games are ending at 10:45.
Yeah,
if they're ending at 9:30, and you know, the Twins have a lot of 6:40 midweek start times until summer. I mean, if you're talking about a 9 o'clock end of the game or 9:15, 9:30, I don't think anybody really dislikes that. I think a lot of people in baseball are going to be happy about it. And it's going to be an interesting change to see how it develops. There will be some, you know, snafus out there where guys get the pitch clock runs out or whatever, both batter and the pitcher. It's going to take a little bit of adjustment. There may be some, you know, the penalty is a ball is awarded or a strike is awarded. We've seen some crazy things happen where games ended with a called strike three on a phantom strike, essentially, because the batter didn't step back in time. There will be some interesting things happening, but I also think there's going to be some discretion issued by the umpires, you know, in the case where the catcher has to start the inning hitting and, the play takes the pitcher out of the, you know, they don't have to return to the mound as quickly because they ran over to cover first base. There is some discretion. Maybe if your pitch calm doesn't work and the pitcher and the catcher can't communicate, there'll be time given for that. But, you know, there's a lot of dead air in the former baseball game as we knew it. And kind of trying to clean that up is not such a bad thing.
Dan Hayes is with us. He writes for The Athletic. He'll be joining us during the season as he follows the Minnesota Twins around and covers them and helps keep us up to date. Dan's got a question for you, Dan.
Well, real quickly, and Dan, I'm sure you're aware of this, Dustin Morris just tweeted out from the Twins that, quote-unquote, he has a good source telling him that Byron Buxton's going to hit third tomorrow. We know that Byron's going to start the season as a DH primarily and not primarily in center field, but how critical is his early load management going to be in terms of keeping him on the field?
Yeah, can you say with any kind of certainty? No, I don't think anybody can, because Byron Buxton got hurt running the bases last year in Boston. But look, you got to try whatever you can. He is just an electric player, and we've seen it over the last 4 years. They play at a 93-win pace when he's on the field. There, I believe in games he starts, they're 152 and 112. If you have that dude in the lineup, you're going to do everything you can to keep him there. And I really like that they're at least being inventive about it. They know that we're really lucky. I think it's going to be 64 here tomorrow. And it wasn't that way earlier in the week. And it looks like it might be good for opening day here. They know that playing in the Midwest, they're going to get a lot of 30s and 40s and 50s, especially in April. And they want to keep him as healthy as possible. And so, you know, I think I don't see a problem with trying. Of course, his value is being in center field. If he is a two-way threat, you know, he's electric.
He said that's what he told us when we were down there. That's what he wanted. He's a center fielder.
A DH. Right. He has zero interest in being a DH. But I think he also has a lot of interest in being on the field.
Yes. At the end of the season for a run.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and he has that great contract that is built for basically, if he improves, if his performance is great and he gets MVP votes, that kind of thing, he gets paid a lot more. It's got escalators in it for great performance. I'm sure he'd love to not make $10 million and instead hit that $25 million that is potentially there, you know, it's 15 million base. But I'm sure he'd love to reach that 25.
No doubt.
And be an MVP. And so, you know, do what you can to try it out. Last year was 92 games. That's the most games he'd played since 2017. So,
all right, Dan, we got to go. We appreciate it. Thank you, and we'll visit with you next week. Happy opening day.
Sounds good.
All right, Dan Hayes from The Athletic. Here on Drive Time. 27 degrees in Minneapolis on CCO. Henry Lake is up next. He's going to take you to Timberwolves basketball in Phoenix. Pregame at 8:30. Alan with the call after 9. Subscribe to our podcast, Drive Time with DeRussia and DeRussia Eats, wherever you pod.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.